The season finale for The Last of Us premieres this Sunday, and HBO has already greenlit a second season. The post-apocalyptic hit is based on one of the most celebrated and groundbreaking video games of all time. I was one of the players who loved the storytelling and cinematic gameplay so much, I was afraid to watch the show, worried it wouldn't actually live up to the game. But the show is so faithful to the game, it doesn't just follow its plot, but sometimes recreates it shot for shot and line for line. So, here to talk about how the series adapted the game, we are joined by Joshua Rivera, TV critic for the gaming and culture website Polygon. Hi, Joshua.
Hi, Celeste. How are you?
Okay, is there an elevator pitch to explain to people the storyline? I mean, I could try. This is a zombie apocalypse. You're following an adult as he tries to protect a teenage girl. Is that fair?
Yeah, roughly. The whole appeal of the game was just how it felt like the storytelling aspirations of like a certain kind of expensive video game were finally being fulfilled.
The video game was ultimately compared to prestige TV. It's a little ironic that people are like, this could be an HBO show. And then it is an HBO show. We want to play a little bit of the opening minutes of the game.
Who do you think you're doing? Keep driving.
I got a kid, Joel.
So do we.
But we have room.
Keep driving, Tommy.
Stop!
And here is that exact same scene from the first episode of the show.
What are you doing?
Got a kid, Joel.
So do we. Keep driving.
We can put him in the back.
So they follow the storytelling of the game almost precisely. Do you think that's part of why the show has been so successful?
I mean, it definitely drives a lot of discussion about it because this hasn't really been done in a live action, like expensive prestige format, right? Games are not historically treated as like a sacred text when adapting. They're just sort of like toys, more or less. The show has this incredible cast in Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey, just two people that you want to watch follow around in the same way that you want to be the person driving the story in a video game.
So let's talk about the casting, because the original game also cast some incredible voiceover actors.
Mm-hmm.
And we get some amazing performances from the actors in the live-action show. Let's take a listen to Merle Dandridge here, who played the Resistance leader Marlene. First, you will hear the character in the game, and then you will hear a clip from the show.
There's a crew of Fireflies that'll meet you at the Capitol building.
That's not exactly close.
You're capable. There's a team of Fireflies waiting for her at the old State House. I know what's out there. We were going with an entire squadron for that very reason. But now I don't have a truck, I don't have a squadron. Fedra's 5 minutes away. What I do have is you. And I know what you're both capable of.
So you may not have heard a difference. That's because Merle Dandridge was the same person who did the voice in the game and is the actor in the actual show. How much did the show actually follow performances from those in the game?
Pretty closely. A lot of what makes the game so compelling is just that they had the same performer doing the vocal performance and also the what they call motion capture, which is they record the character's movements for the digital artist to sort of paint over, right?
Yeah.
And then you get to appreciate sort of like the subtle differences the live action actors bring to it, even when they're being faithful, just sort of like, you know, if they want to go softer or more intense. Ellie in particular, Bella Ramsey, is a lot more sharp-edged in the show than she is in the game at first.
They did have to replace the two starring roles. Pedro Pascal plays Joel. In the game, Joel was played by an absolute legend of a voiceover actor, Troy Baker, who people may know from BioShock Infinite, Tales from the Borderlands, Final Fantasy 13. I mean, so many of them, God of War. He gets a cameo in the TV show as well. He plays the right-hand man of a very villainous cult leader, and it's a pivotal moment in the game because the player steps away from the perspective of playing as Joel and then takes control of Ellie. That is the girl Joel is escorting. How does the show handle that moment?
You know, much like in the video game, Joel is injured, and he cannot take care of himself. He's pretty much cooped up. And so Ellie is looking for supplies and medicine. And the show pretty much has her get entangled in a settlement run by a religious leader named David. So the main difference here is basically the fact that you do not have the video game's structure of, like, you're controlling one character and now you're controlling Ellie.
Yeah.
When you control Ellie in the game, you are vulnerable. You can't carry as much. You don't have as many weapons. You can't take as many hits as this grown man, you know?
Yeah.
And so you have to overpower this man who essentially wants to prey on you because he's a cannibal.
I've been quite honest with you. Now I think it's your turn. It's the only way I'm going to be able to convince the others.
Convince them of what?
That you can come around.
The show has Ellie imprisoned by him, but he takes on a more lecherous posture.
Think of what we could do together. We'd grow, spread out, and we'd do whatever we needed for our people. Imagine the life we could give them. Imagine the life we could build.
In this particular episode, it's instructive because interactivity can do a lot to sort of, like, paper over melodrama.
Yeah.
The fact that you're playing Ellie and you have this heightened sense of vulnerability, mm-hmm. that's a lot of stress on you as the player. It doesn't necessarily matter as much what the villain is saying. He's a danger. It's a very primal feeling. You can't rely on that sort of lizard brain response in a television show.
Yeah.
You kind of have to, like, lay it out. And sometimes in the adaptation, it gets laid on a little too thick.
I wonder if you feel that the TV show accomplishes what the video game did in making you feel as though you're right there immediately within this story.
No, I think the great strength of a lot of video games can just be time. Mm. You spend a lot of time with Joel and Ellie. The game never breaks away for the entire time you're playing the game, which can amount from anywhere from like 12 to 20 hours, you know? Mm. The show is 9 episodes. Some of those episodes don't even center Joel or Ellie.
Yeah. The show mm-hmm. spends a lot of time focusing on some of the side characters. Who stands out for you?
Yeah, the big standout for the show is definitely the third episode, which centers on some characters named Bill and Frank. And one of these characters is played by Nick Offerman, and he's a survivalist. He's a sort of like a doomsday prepper guy who, you know, it worked out for him.
Yeah. He had prepared for doom, and doom came.
Yes. And then yes. another man who was played by Murray Bartlett, he gets caught in one of Nick Offerman's traps, and that's their meet cute.
I'm letting you go, so go.
All right. Look, first, my name's Frank.
Oh, yeah? Here's the thing, Frank. If I feed you, then every bum you talk to about it is going to show up here looking for a free lunch. And this is not an Arby's.
Well, Arby's didn't have free lunch. It was a restaurant.
Aww. They have this very, loving relationship. That's not really in the game. You meet a character, a survivalist, and there is a passing reference to a partner and their fate, but they don't appear on screen together. They're just people in this world. And that's one of the benefits of a game, where it's sort of like it situates you in this world. And it sort of surrounds you with stories or hints of stories, and it leaves you to conjure it. And the cool thing about the show is that it took the time to actually conjure this story and imagine what those characters were like. And that's the sort of thing that a TV show can bring to a video game.
You know, there have been a lot of TV shows based on video games that were just abysmal. But we have gotten kind of a string of them recently that have been really good. I think Witcher was quite good. Mm-hmm. Arcane on Netflix. We're expecting a huge Mario movie. I'm not going to make any predictions about that. But Cyberpunk Edgerunners is mm-hmm. extremely popular. Is it possible that Hollywood has finally figured out how to translate video game storytelling into the TV and movie screen?
I think for a long time, Hollywood sort of just treated games like toys.
Yeah.
Where it was just sort of like, oh, as long as the action figure is there, people will show up. And that's not how people have thought about video games for a long time now. They are stories, they are characters, and people have strong connections to them. If you're not interested in telling a story, then people aren't going to show up or at the very least respect what you're doing. But it does seem like Hollywood wants to do that now. They want that because, you know, we're not going to do superheroes forever. And they want what's next.
Joshua Rivera is TV critic for the gaming and culture website Polygon. Joshua, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Celeste.